This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Jennifer Simonetti. Brian, how are you, Jennifer?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm excellent. We've had you on the show for the last couple of weeks. You're a master of wine, and you've been doing all sorts of stuff. Marking Master of Wine exams. You've done the diploma as well. So what we're going to talk about today is actually one of the bits that some people really struggle with, and that's the quality assessment of the wine. Because certainly at diploma level, at level three, I teach my guys a very mechanical, they call it BLIC, which is balance, length, intensity, and complexity. And I get my guys just to, if it's got high or medium plus, give it a mark and tot the marks up. And that gives you a rough idea of what the quality level of the wine is. Keep it very simple. It's not a problem. But when you start getting into the level four, you start to have to put an argument forward, not about it's just an acceptable quality. It's like, why is it an acceptable quality?
Right.
And that's where I think, you know, you can talk about balance, length, intensity, and complexity, but that's not the full picture sometimes.
Absolutely. And I remember being a diploma candidate, and I would listen to some of the other students give their quality answers and be like, wow, mine sounds so formulaic. All I do is BLIC. And I would listen to some of these others, and it just sounded so good. And after a certain point, I was like, I got to learn how to do what they do, because it just sounds so much more masterful. And they really have a great handle on this wine. And so I analyzed other people's, you know, tasting notes and or notes as they wrote up for quality. And I came up with something that I use for the MW exam, and I teach to students for MW and for diploma. And it really helps take your quality notes to the next level. So first thing is taking your BLIC. Now, if you have on your notes on your scrap paper or whatever it is, and you've got your BLIC, like you said, keep it simple, right? But you don't want to sound formulaic, because nothing makes an examiner's eyes roll more than doing something formulaically. Because if you have to show your training wheels, then you don't have mastery around it. So basically, what you should be doing first is put it within context. Don't just say it's a good quality wine. You can probably tell if it's an entry level. This is a good quality entry level wine. Right. And then you can give your arguments and maybe just mix up the BLIC. Talk about why, you know, it's an entry level wine because it has a short finish. It's very simple. And so, you know, so step number one, putting it within context. Step number two is mixing up that BLIC. But also step number three is what I call the check plus minus. So this is my technique that I use to kind of go to another level. So instead of just saying, this is a good quality wine, as it has good balance, moderately long length, good intensity, and moderate complexity. So the check in the check plus minus technique. So the check is, you say what it is, where it belongs, and why. So for example, this is a good quality mid-market or $15 Italian Pinot Grigio with good balance of pure citrusy fruit with fresh, crisp acidity and moderate alcohol. So that's telling you why it belongs in that mid-market level. So if it's
what you're really talking about here is the components that make up the balance?
Correct. You're using BLIC as the evidence for why it's that. So the balance of all those things is one of the reasons why it belongs in mid-market. But then the plus part of the technique, so check plus minus, the plus part is say why it doesn't belong below. So why doesn't it belong in entry level, right? So your next sentence is like, good flavor concentration puts this above entry level quality. So that's telling the examiner, you really know it belongs in this kind of mid-market range. And then the minus part of that technique, check plus minus, is you say why it doesn't belong in the tier above. So why isn't it premium? So altogether, so let me read the whole note. So instead of saying, this is a good quality wine, it has good balance, moderate long length, good intensity and moderate complexity. You're saying this is a good quality mid-market Italian Pinot Grigio with good balance of pure citrusy fruit with fresh, crisp acidity and moderate alcohol. It has good flavor concentration, but this is, which puts this at above entry level quality. Yet its simple, fruity nature and fairly short finish detract from putting it in premium. So you're telling why it belongs where it belongs. So that really elevates your game when you're talking about quality. Now, even if you don't write that in your essay and you start practicing with that kind of mindset, it's like, all right, you've got your Blick. You're looking at your Blick and you're like, okay, where does it belong? Is this a good quality luxury wine? Is this a good quality premium wine? Is this entry level? Well, all right, now that I've put it in context, well, why does it belong there? If you have a wine, you're like, oh, this is outstanding concentration and this is really long length. They're like, well, that's telling you why it belongs in luxury. There are other quality parameters other than Blick. For the MW...
let's get on to that in a minute. I just want to explore this a little bit. So one of the things you've mentioned there is not what you've said isn't just about quality, though. What you've tried to expand into is the market positioning of the wine and using the quality or using to explain why the market position is there. You're not really in the quality assessment because you've said it's above entry level but below luxury. And right. What you're really talking about is market position.
It's pricing. It's trying to put more pricing. Market positioning would be something more along the lines of it belongs in, primary international markets because real bold fruity, bold fruit and, moderate structure, that type of thing. But this is really just saying why it's not just, is it a good wine? Put some context around it. Why is it that good? So it's pushing the envelope. It's forcing you to identify why does it belong in those levels, which makes you more confident later on where it belongs, right?
Yeah.
So even if you don't need it for WSET and you're going to start to see it for diploma level, it definitely gives you much bigger level of confidence. But you can even taste wines, and for sommeliers, they understand why it belongs, where it belongs on their wine list. So it's really pushing the envelope for a purpose.
And Blick isn't the only quality measurement. So for example, things like definition of aroma can be a good indicator, purity of fruit or lack of purity of fruit, complexity. Some people can say, well, this wine is incredibly complex, right. i.e. there's a lot going on there. But then you can say, it's got a lovely purity of fruit. And that's another reason why it's a good wine. So there's it's not always as obvious sometimes.
No, there's a lot of different quality parameters. And in my grid studying for the MW, at the top of my paper, I would put Fublicate. And that was my, I expanded Fublicate. On Blick. Fublicate, right?
It sounds like a swear word, to be honest.
I know, doesn't it? That's how you can remember it, right? So FBLICCAT. So finesse, balance, length, integration, complexity, concentration, ageability, and typicity. And typicity has three forms. So you've got typicity of grape, typicity of origin, typicity of style. So, but you'll notice that, let's say for balance, you need the eyes, nose, palate part in order to come up with balance, really structure. So it's, it's the flavor concentration along with acidity and tannin. So you have those elements that you tasted in your kind of grid, in your WSET grid. Those are kind of the building blocks of your quality parameters. And the same thing with finesse, your purity of fruit. And you can have a very finesse-driven structure. You can have very fine tannins, right? Integration is how all of the flavors come together, how well knit they are. Because if you have, when you taste a wine and you have nothing but fruit, and then all of a sudden smack, you get the oak, that's not well integrated. So there are all of these different parameters that come into play in building your arguments around. So, but the other thing, and this is one of the big reasons why wine critics have very different ratings for the same wine, is because they'll prioritize that parameter list differently. So back in the day, or Robert Parker, concentration would have been up at the top of his list. Whereas, mm-hmm. let's say for Jancis Robinson, finesse was at the top of her list. So they may have very different reasons why a wine is rated the way that they are. But, and that's where things can get confusing for quality parameters. But as long as you feel strongly, some wines have different things going for them. So for an Amarone, you know, Amarone della Valpolicella, you have, you know, concentration there. Certainly that's going to prioritize that, but also complexity. So you're not going to waste a whole lot of time on perhaps other quality parameters. It's the ones that stand out the most that are going to give you the best type of quality answer.
Nebbiolo is an interesting example. Oh, I want to go back through some of those sublicate things as well and talk about particularly finesse and typicity, because they're ones I don't really talk about. But right. Nebbiolo, you know, sometimes you can say that when I go to Nebbiolo tastings, my mouth starts to go numb after about 10, 15 wines.
Yeah, it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. I just don't do it anymore because it's just uncomfortable. But it's very hard. You'd get crucified by many people who said this wine's out of balance. The fact that I can't actually drink it because my mouth starts to hurt would imply to me that the wine's not quite in balance that you'd hope for. But it is sometimes relative to the wine as well.
And it's relative to the quality level, because let's say you've got a young Barolo, right? You've got a young Barolo. Those tannins are off the charts. And they're astringent. But in combination, let's say, with the level of fruit concentration in there, and obviously Nebbiolo is very high acid, you see the building blocks here. Even if it's out of balance right now, and those things, tannin and acid, stick out like a sore thumb, this, because of that fruit concentration, it has the structure to age. And wines that have the structure to age generally tend to be higher quality. So that can be an indicator for you and go, aha. But if it's a really terrible quality Lange Nebbiolo, it's just high acid and high tannin, and it doesn't have the fruit concentration, that tells you that this is not a high quality Nebbiolo. This is probably more towards the entry level, mid-market kind of range, where it is out of balance and it doesn't have the longevity to it. And so that's why ageability becomes a quality parameter, because those wines that have the ability to age have the components that are so intense that it those wines tend to be the higher quality and higher priced wines.
When you're talking about balance, let's take an immature but very good quality Barolo with insane tannins and acidity, setting off the tannins and all this sort of stuff. Still, it might have concentration of fruit, but you might not find the wine particularly comfortable. It's too young to drink.
Yeah.
At that point, that wine's technically probably out of balance, but because of the ageability, it could come into balance at a later date. Are you really tasting the wine that's in front of you, or the wine you imagine it might be in the future?
You're doing both. I mean, for the MW exam, you talk about where it is right now, saying it's a bit tight. It's a bit tight right now, but it's showing the elements that's telling you where it's going to go. But you know, you may not want to start by saying that this is a luxury level wine because of its balance. You give the argument for its longevity. How long is that flavor lasting? What is the intensity of the flavors that are coming through that you've got there? What is the complexity of the wine that's going on there? And yes, as it ages, it'll get even more and more complex. But with a Nebbiolo, even young Nebbiolos, you've got those rose petals, you've got those, you know, black English breakfast tea leaves kind of thing going on. You've got, you know, the strawberry, like light dried red cherry. So there's many things you can talk about. Also, level of intensity of new oak, that can also be an indicator of quality. So you can talk about, I mean, some more modern Barolos, they have more obvious new oak in it. And if it's a traditional Barolo, you can talk about, and it's going to have a little bit of oxidative character in there and therefore more complexity. So you can talk about those things first, as opposed to saying, this thing's way out of balance. You know, you're euphemistically saying this is tight right now, but in the future, it's got promise.
I must admit, it might be a failing my ability to tasters. I always find things like tannins in particular rob the wine of fruit. And it's very hard for me to see length sometimes in wines that are very tannic.
It's very true. It can cut the finish short. Yeah,
it does. It does. And so I land up having to make exceptions for wines that are very tannic, even right. though I know I might go, oh, actually, it's quite short. But I know later on, as long as the fruit doesn't collapse on you during the aging process, you know the tannins are going to go. How do you deal with that type of thing?
Yeah, well, it sounds to me like you're a super taster. So it sounds like you have more taste buds on your tongue than the average person. And so tannins, it's just like my mentor in the MW program. He's a super taster as well. So tannins are just too much for him. But his mentor... he has less taste buds. So it was another MW. I'm not going to rename nameless. He has less taste buds than the average person. So something that's really off the charts, 10 to him, he's like, eh, it's not that high. So he had to learn to kind of temper. So he had to recalibrate in a sense. So something that was really high for him, he's like, okay, I just got to dial it back and look for other corroborating evidence. So just that's
would he change his calibration based on the tannins level, for example, which is what I'm finding I have to do is I have to say, well, this wine's short, but it's insanely tannic. So therefore, it's probably got a lot more length to it.
Yeah. It's like saying it's not you. It's me. It's it's not the wine. It's me. Yeah. So and your palate can be in different places at different times. I remember doing one mock exam and I went in. And I tasted all 12 red wines. I'm like, it's not possible they gave 12 Nebbiolos. But my palate was so off that day that everything just tasted tannic. And you know, one of those wines was a Beaujolais. I'm like, really? Really?
A village Beaujolais can have tannins.
but not like it, I thought it was a Nebbiolo. So I was showing my calibration was way off.
Pale. That. It's pale.
Yeah. It's pale. But yeah, so yeah, calibration is something that you have to do. I mean, in comparison to what the wines are and also to, you know, being an examiner, you have to understand when you're reading other people's notes that people do have different thresholds and there's a range. So if something's really, really high tannin, but this person says it's moderately high, but astringent. I'm like, okay, they're in the same ballpark. Okay, they got what it is, but their calibration might be just slightly different. But it depends on their other corroborating pieces of evidence that really make it a passing note.
Okay, I want to go back to finesse and typicity because they're two that are quite different to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I always worry about people who talk about the wine having great finesse because usually I find that they're overpriced, flavorless wines that are they're just trying to flog. You know, oh, this wine is very fine. And it was
elegant.
The wine is so elegant. An elegant wine to me, when someone says it's an elegant wine, it's no flavor and lots of acidity. Do you know what I mean? And if you take that approach, you're right most of the time.
Wow.
It's a bit tough, but so let's talk a little bit about finesse.
Marketing materials aside, when you're tasting for a blind tasting, you have to be true with yourself. But finesse for me is more, it depends on if it's white, it depends on the kind of the finesse, the integration of the acid into that wine. And if it's got some residual sugar maybe. Well, if it's got some fineness, you know, like if to use an analogy, using fabric, you've got velvet, which it's not as fine as let's say silk. So that it can be a textural thing going on with fineness. With champagne, you can tell a champagne is more fine or has more finesse than let's say, a Prosecco that's used Charmat tank method, because you have more bubbles in there, in champagne. So you've got more and smaller bubbles, and therefore the texture is much finer. It's like comparing a lot of tiny little pearls, many of them, to lots of large marbles, right? So there is, you can have that word finesse relate to specific things. With red wine, so
you're talking about textural feeling of the wine?
Correct. Yeah.
Is that what you mean by finesse? Is just the textural?
Oh, yes. And most times it's around the texture of the wine. And with red wines, it's more around the tannins, you know, because you can have tannins that feel chunky and clunky and or astringent. And then you've got ones that, you know, particularly for, you know, let's say Pinot Noir or an aged Bordeaux, they are definitely more fine, right? Mm. You can have more of them, but they can be fine.
And in that case, would you also include things like astringency in there? Because if they've over-extracted the wines, perhaps you'll get some more astringency, or maybe the grapes are slightly underripe, or they've been a little bit...
Yeah, you can say green tannins. Yeah, saying something like green tannins, and it's that kind of indicates there's an astringency there. And the riper the tannin... You know, like if you've walked through a vineyard with a winemaker, and I loved doing this, you see the winemaker walk through, taste grapes, spit in his hands. He spits the pips in his hands, and he's looking at the pips. What he's looking for is the color of those pips. Yeah. If the pips are green, chances are that wine, whether white or red or rosé, they're going to have a little bit of a bite of astringency to it. If they're brown, it's chances are, and they're ripe, you know, everything else is ripe, you're going to have finer tannins. There's going to be less of a chance of astringency.
Yeah, sure. Astringency is one element, but you're really talking about the textural feel of the wine.
Correct.
Chalky, silky, whatever it is.
And which is closely tied to integration. You know, integration is a concept that a lot of people have difficulty getting their heads wrapped around. But if you think of have you ever had a yogurt with fruit at the bottom? You know, like the white yogurt part on top and the fruit on the bottom. Well, that's not integrated. So if you taste a wine and you're getting fruit up front and you're getting other things afterwards, that's not well integrated. If you took that yogurt and you mixed it all up so you can't tell where the yogurt part ends and the fruit begins, it's all well mixed, that's integration. And with wine, it's about, you know, where the fruit and the acid and the tannin, it all comes together. It's so well put together. It's so well knit or mixed up, however you want to use your analogy. That is integration. So that is a very telling kind of quality parameter.
Although sometimes I find integration can be a negative. When you're looking at something like a reasonably good white Burgundy, the fruit lands up being so integrated, you'd know if it was missing, but... Bloody hell, trying to work out what the fruit structure is in a wine on a Burgundy, I've struggled so many times. You know, I can get the hazelnut, I can get the whatever it is,
the butter and the cream and all that.
But the fruit, and you know if it's not there, the wine's going to be hollow and missing. But getting that, when it is integrated, particularly when it's young.
Yeah, particularly when it's young, that can be, But what some, particularly the higher quality white Burgundies, Premier Cru and Grand Cru, and when they're young, they're not really about the fresh fruitiness. They're more about the other complex things that are going on. So I can see that conundrum.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk a wee bit about tapisti as well, because tapisti, I think if you're say French, that's great because you've got all these rules to make sure you produce the same style of wine as the next person beside you. But if you're in California, you could be making a Sauvignon Blanc one particular way, oaky, and then not have it oaky. And not that I would ever encourage anybody to ever drink an oaky Sauvignon Blanc from California, but fumé Blanc is not my thing.
Ouch.
I haven't had a good one yet anyway. So it used to be in the level 3 specification. So I spent years trying to find one I could drink and I couldn't find one. Anyway, but do you know what I mean? Tapisti is relevant for some places, more relevance for some places than perhaps other places, just because of the rules and that people are forced to go down.
Yeah, in my grid in my blind tasting notes, I have tapisti there for a couple of different reasons. Mainly, my reason for including tapisti in there is, you know how it is, you're tasting through and you're like, oh, wow, this has got to be, this has got to be a Chardonnay, right? And it's actually a white Rioja, which I messed up. if on my typicity rating on, I looked and it was like, okay, well, it's probably 3 out of 5. Well, I probably should have paid attention to that note because it was only 3 out of 5 typicity. I probably should have considered something else, right? Mm. If it's a 5 out of 5, this is so typical for what it is, then you're like, okay, this is dead on. But if you're like, if your typicity rating that you're giving is like, it's not that typical for this, but I guess it's this, like, well, that should be a red flag that maybe it's something else. But typicity also, you can have a really high quality wine that's atypical, right?
Yes,
but definitely. But there is something to be said, let's say even for the MW, it's about market positioning. So if this is an atypical, let's say an atypical Chenin Blanc or atypical Sauvignon, that's going to lead to different types of accounts, because typicity is really about, if it tastes typical for what it is, sommeliers use it. It means there's no hand selling required, right? So that's why for sommeliers and for the master sommelier exam, typicity is of paramount importance, because it leads to what sommeliers put on their wine list, because they want wines basically to sell themselves. And in order to sell themselves, it has to, what you see on the label has to be predictable on what's in the bottle. So that's where typicity really comes into play. Just because it's atypical doesn't mean it's not high quality, but it can lead you to other different types of conclusions.
When you're talking about typicity, what you're really talking about is whatever those characteristics are. We mentioned in a previous podcast, you know, Grenache, you're saying you miss the low acidity in Grenache, but you've got low acidity, you've got high alcohols, often quite pale, low tannins. Those are the classic things. And Grenache, and with the red fruits that you often get with Grenache, it can be quite close to a Pinot Noir or even a Gamay, because they have the same color, they can have the same tannin level.
Yeah, there's red fruit. Grenache. I mean, if you're just based on color and aroma and you're missing the alcohol, like I did, you might just jump to a conclusion and go, oh, this has got to be, you know, California Pinot Noir or something along those lines. And then you taste, you're like, ew, that low acid. No. Okay. So it's definitely a beach bunny of a grape. So it likes a lot of that, you know, sunshine, and that's where you get the alcohol from. So yeah.
So, but that's what you're talking about, typicity. You've got to have made a call about what you think it is and then use typicity almost to justify it, or
or at least use that corroborating piece of evidence, you know. So like I said, if I said, oh, this is a Pinot Noir and I have a level of 2 or 3, it's like, it's not that typical. It's like, right, I should have jumped back, red flag. Oh, low acid, high alcohol. Oh, it's that cherry lifesaver kind of flavor. This might be Grenache. Okay, it's Grenache.
If there's one thing you would say to someone who wants to improve their tasting technique, one thing that they should do, what would it be?
One thing to improve their tasting ability. Really, I think it's about practicing and comparing and contrasting wines. Don't taste wine in a vacuum. And that's how I used to study when I was first starting. And it really inhibited my growth in terms of my palate, because I would come home from work, right, and open up a bottle, go, oh, I'm really loving this wine. But if you really want to broaden your palate and improve your skills, you do compare and contrast. It really brings out so much more. And I learned this way before I was in wine. I went to the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, and I know nothing about art. Right. But I remember going, and back in the day, they had those headsets that you put on and you could walk around to the exhibits. Well, there was an exhibit that had two different painters, and they were a century apart, and they did a compare and contrast. Well, after me walking around those exhibits, I left feeling like I actually knew something now about art, as opposed to just going, oh, it's a pretty painting. Oh, that's a pretty painting. And I think that's what we do if we taste wines one at a time each night or at a time. You're not really getting the full effect and learning unless you're comparing and contrasting two wines together. So that would be my number one thing to do. Of course, it means you're drinking more at night, but, you know, occupational hazard.
Or you can drink them over a period of time and highly oxidized version from earlier in the week. And
or thank God for Coravin. So I mean, we didn't have that back in the day, but we have that now. You can
Coravin, they help a lot. All right then, Jennifer, thank you very much. That's been really, really good.
This has been great. Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.